Thanks so much for joining us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to talk about German immigration to Wisconsin for the next 25 minutes or so. German immigrants started arriving in Wisconsin, I think, around the 1800s. And their cultural and economic impact, obviously, are felt throughout the state to this day and in so many ways. And we're going to be talking about maybe the dreams and the industriousness of so many Germans brought to Wisconsin. Mark Loudon, our guest, a professor of German linguistics and the director of the Max Kada Institute for German-American Studies at UW-Madison. Maybe you have some German ancestry. What do you know about it? What family stories were passed along to you? Give a call. The number 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Mark Loudon, welcome.
Thank you, Larry. I'm pleased to be on the show today.
You know, and that first little introduction I did in the beginning, I pronounced it the Max Cade Institute, and I looked up the pronunciation, and it said most Americans pronounce it Cade, but it's not.
That's correct. His name is pronounced Max Kada.
Kada, and that's the German.
That's the German pronunciation, and that's the pronunciation that most of us who are affiliated with entities that have that name go by.
And that's very good to know. And tell us about the Institute for German-American Studies at UW-Madison.
So thank you for asking. The Institute was founded in 1983, which was coincidental with the tricentennial of German migration to North America. So 1683 is the symbolic beginning of the German presence in the American colonies at that time. And it was founded with a very generous grant from the Max Kada Foundation in New York City with a twofold mission to document the history and the legacy of German-speaking migrants to not just Wisconsin or the upper Midwest, but to North America broadly. We've included that to talk about sort of the German-speaking diaspora throughout the world and the impact of migration on local cultures and cultural hybridity, that sort of thing. We have a fairly large library and archives that include a lot of so-called ego documents, so personal letters, that sort of thing. And then we're very dedicated to public outreach, and that's squarely in line with the Wisconsin idea. So we sponsor many, many in-person events every year in communities across the state, mostly rural.
And if people want to learn some more, Kada, it's spelled K-A-D-E.
Correct.
And if you type in Max Kada Institute, it's going to pop up.
You'll
and there's
this.
Lots of information on your site, for sure. And, you know, we spent the last hour talking about Waltrud, a Wisconsin immigrant who grew up in Nazi Germany. A lot of Germans came to the U.S. after World War II. But as you say, things started a whole lot earlier.
Yeah, 1839 was actually the first sort of established settlement of German speakers in Wisconsin. And that's the community of Freistadt, which is still an unincorporated community located in far western Ozaukee County, so politically part of the city of Mequon, but fairly close to the city of Germantown. And that was founded by so-called old Lutheran settlers who came from a part of the German Empire that no longer exists as a German-speaking area today. They were from what was known as Eastern Pomerania, and they came to Wisconsin starting in 1839.
And the German immigration was pretty strong, I mean, compared to other groups.
Absolutely. Wisconsin, even really still to this day, has the largest percentage of its population that can claim German ancestry. So it's over 40%. But there are some communities, especially in southeastern Wisconsin, actually not that far from Freistadt, so places like West Bend and Germantown, Watertown, that have, you know, something like 60% of its population claiming some German ancestry.
Yeah, I think Watertown has the highest concentration of Lutheran churches per capita of anywhere in Wisconsin. There's at least I think six or more.
I believe it.
Lutheran churches in Watertown. Yeah. So why did they come? I mean, what were the factors that led so many Germans to come here?
Well, part of it was just simply you know, those who were migrants who were looking for available farmland, if they wanted to settle in rural areas, they went to wherever the frontier was in North America. So they weren't going to be settling in, say, places like Pennsylvania, Ohio, or Indiana, because most of the inexpensive land was already taken. So it just so happened that this kind of, we can say, sort of fringe on the western sort of edge of settlement in North America or in the United States at that time, starting in the 1830s, 1840s, 1850s, was places like Wisconsin and Illinois and other parts of the upper Midwest, so Iowa and Minnesota.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the German-born population of Wisconsin actually peaked around 1900.
That's correct.
Did it not?
Yep, just before World War I, exactly.
And so it declined a bit. And why do you think it declined a bit after that?
It declined because of the restrictions at the national level for migrants, period, right? So immigration after World War I, especially in the 1920s, sort of in the spirit of nativism politically at the national level at that time, led to a downturn, not just in the migration of German speakers to the United States, but migrants from elsewhere as well.
And, of course, Milwaukee became... I wonder what the percentage of Germans with German ancestry are in Milwaukee these days. If that held up?
Not as much as places, like West Bend. I think West Bend, according to the last census, has the largest percentage of its population. But I've heard, I don't know whether this is anecdotal, that at one time when there were still telephone books being produced, that Milwaukee had more Schmitz than Smiths. Could well be.
Oh, man. Well, just looking at the kinds of things that they brought to this country, one was the social aspect and social clubs. You know, as a kid, I remembered you wanted to have a good time. Turner Hall in downtown Madison was a place to go. And I, at the time, you know, when I was 19 years old, I didn't know the history of that.
Yeah, the Turner movement's amazing. It's kind of a blend of the YMCA, YWCA movement with a kind of sort of middle-class political civic engagement organization. And it was an amazing network. So their motto was a sound mind in a sound body. And to this day, there are Turner Halls that, like, for example, the big one in Milwaukee, that are sort of, we'll say, the hubs of civic engagement, right? So it's bringing people together from all different strata of society, including folks that came from various different religious affiliations or no religious affiliation at all. It was kind of a neutral meeting ground for people that shared a common interest in their communities and making their communities better places to live for everyone.
Yeah, I can remember some dances at Turner Hall. It was located just off the square, not far off the square. Now, I looked it up to see where it might be located, and I see there's a Turner's Hall on South Stoughton Road.
That's right, in Monona.
in Monona. So yeah. I don't know if they just moved it or how it all happened. But anyway, Austin in Lafarge has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Austin.
Hi, Larry. My name is Austin. I grew up in northern Illinois, live here in southern Wisconsin. My family name, without sharing that, shares a very similar name to a town in Poland. The spelling is P-O-L-A-N-O-W, Polanow. And I'm very curious. My grandfather told us that he remembered his great-grandmother speaking German, but I'm wondering how the Polish-German border, being changed so many times through the decades and centuries, distinguishes Polish versus German heritage. Thank you.
Ah, thanks for calling, Austin.
That is a great question. So, you know, keeping in mind the eastern expanse of the German Empire into the early 20th century was very, very considerable. It intersected with what we would basically say is Eastern Europe today, including a sizable part of Poland. There was a lot of cultural contact, and it's quite possible that your ancestors came from a region which is still quite bicultural today. It's called Silesia, which is sort of in the southwestern part of the modern state of Poland today. And there are even communities there that still have sizable numbers of German speakers, including German-speaking mayors there. And Silesian identity, Silesian language and culture is considered sort of unique. It's distinct from German. It's also distinct, actually, from the rest of Poland. It's a very fascinating area.
Yeah, really interesting. Thank you very much for that question and comment. Bob and Marshall will go to you. Hi, Bob.
Afternoon. I just had a question on that. I'm German descent as well. My grandpa was very much German. That's pretty much all he spoke. And he had taught, I've never met him before he died, many, many years before I was born. But the stories I've heard was on his farm close to Columbus, they had a prisoner camp of war for Germans. And he had the German prisoners working on his farm because he was speaking German very fluently. Do you know anything about that German camp in Columbus?
Not that specific camp, but that's a very, very common story. There were several German POW camps throughout Wisconsin. And when we think of POW camps, we don't think of exactly sort of, you know, friendly conditions. But the conditions for those German POWs were pretty benign. They were pretty good in comparison to what they could have experienced elsewhere. And there were many, many stories of German POWs being encouraged to work on local farms, as well as in local factories, especially canning factories. And even some of them were permitted to possess firearms. They were able to go out deer hunting in the fall, which is an amazing story. And a little shout out to our university here. I didn't know this, but UW Extension was running courses, college level courses for German POWs during that time.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that. I did, and Bob, I did have a chance to talk with a German POW. I was telling Mark about it just before the show, a guy by the name of Kurt Peckman, who was a POW. And he obviously came to the Madison area and worked on farms and canning factories.
There you go.
As you were talking about it, he made a lot of friends. And when he had to go back after the war, then a farmer from Lodi, you had to have a sponsor.
That's correct. Yep.
Talk about that a little
bit. Yeah, so they all had to go back, but many of them wanted to return, and many, in fact, did return. But they did so at the invitation or formal sponsorship of some of the Wisconsin families, many of whom were of German descent, that invited them to come back.
Yeah, it was really interesting. When my dad died, we went to Peckman Memorials to get a stone, and Kurt Peckman, pretty old guy at the time, but he regaled myself and my mother with stories about his time, not only in Germany, but here while he was a POW. It was a really, really fascinating conversation with him. Well, Jim in La Crosse, what's on your mind?
Hello. I'm wondering about how many Germans served in the American Civil War. I had a great uncle, Henry, who volunteered when he was 17 from Palmyra, Wisconsin.
Great question. I don't have specific numbers for you, but there were entire German regiments or German-speaking regiments, including from Wisconsin and other states of the upper Midwest, as well as, some Pennsylvania Dutch-speaking regiments from Pennsylvania. And that's a special interest of mine because I speak Pennsylvania Dutch. It's a little plug out there. But yeah, sort of there were large numbers of first-generation migrants who served in the mostly on the Union side during the Civil War.
Jim, thank you very much for calling. And Wamang emailed us to say that they were in the Army Reserve at Fort McCoy and heard stories of the Nazi German POWs being held here. And after the war, he indicated that POWs were given the option to stay or go back to Germany. Is that true, or was...
I think they all had to go back formally for immigration purposes. They couldn't just stay continuously, but it was not difficult for many of them to get the permission to return.
So and Vern and Boyd, we'll go to you. Vern, hi.
Oh, yeah, thanks for taking the call. So on my dad's side, we go back to about 1790, and they came in southeastern Ohio. It was pretty poor there. So then they moved to Wisconsin. And most important thing, my mom's was German, too, so she immigrated here from probably much later. My dad was born in 1904. Now, the important thing is, his brother, Steve, he fought in the Battle of the Bulge. My mom's brother, he was a sniper in World War II. He got killed. So my dad was in the Army in 1941-42. So we have a long history of going back.
Yeah. You probably hear that a bit in your work, Mark.
Yes, there were a number of first-generation immigrants, many of whom served on the front lines in the infantry, also who served in intelligence because of their knowledge of the German language and German culture. Henry Kissinger was one of those people. He was after the war. Yeah, yeah. His family migrated in the 1930s, and I believe it was in the 1950s that he served over there in an intelligence capacity.
Let's talk about some of the, I mean, we talked about social clubs, but there are a lot of contributions that the German immigrants have made not only to our state, but to our nation and probably the world. Let's talk about, one of the things that comes right to mind to me are just the German food traditions.
Certainly, Bier and Bratz is, you know, kind of the obvious two that go right to the top of the list there. And certainly the brewing industry in Wisconsin owes a lot to the German presence in Wisconsin. There were many that were engaged in dairy farming. I want to give a shout out also to the Swiss German migrants, including those that settled just south of Madison, like in the New Glarus and Monroe area, who were very, very important even still today in the dairy and specifically cheesemaking industry.
Yeah, so those are all big. And go back to the brewers. I mean, the big breweries, name off those that really were started.
Schlitz, Miller, Pabst, Blatz.
they were all started by German immigrants.
Yeah.
By German immigrants.
Yeah.
And most of them are still going.
Yeah,
you know,
they may not necessarily
Miller
be centered.
Was another one.
Exactly. I highly recommend going to the Pabst Mansion. That's the last of the great mansions right there near Marquette University in Milwaukee. And the Pabst Mansion was built by this, you know, Captain Frederick Pabst, who was one of these early so-called brewer barons.
And the Pabst Farms.
Pabst Farms is...
Talk about them for a minute.
So I believe that's where they grew a lot of the hops.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was, you know, they needed a sort of a hinterland to be able to provide the hops and barley for the beer. And so, yes, Pabst Farms was important.
How does German immigration to Wisconsin compare to subsequent waves of immigration from other parts of the world?
You know, one thing that... immigration in general, or migrants share in common, even going back to the early colonial era, who have come to North America, is that the primary motivation is economic, bettering their economic circumstances. So a lot of people talk about, say, like, you know, German speakers and others in search of religious freedom and political freedom. And that was definitely true in many cases. But ultimately, the primary driver of migration was economic and to... you know, hopefully experience better economic opportunities, economic freedoms that people didn't enjoy in the places that they came from. And that's a through line up to the very present today.
Yeah, I guess I would go along with that. Let's put it that way. So in your mind, what do you think the biggest contribution the German immigration has meant to Wisconsin?
I'd say civic engagement. And thinking also... I had the privilege of meeting Frank Zeidler, who was the last mm-hmm. socialist mayor of Milwaukee,
yeah.
who was a German heritage speaker of German. And just, you know, he was the last of the so-called sewer socialists. And that was they embraced that term as people who were very, very dedicated to their communities, especially Milwaukee. And, you know, by and large, they were squeaky clean when it came to sort of their kind of trustworthiness and honesty in their personal dealings as well as politically. They weren't going to be bought or owned by political machines. And that's something that, you know, that kind of progressive political tradition that puts average people front and center is something that I think we can feel very pleased about here in Wisconsin. Obviously, Fightin' Bob La Follette's tradition is part of that too. But German speakers played, I think, a very, very important role in the emergence of progressive politics at the national level and state level.
And I'm trying to remember... how many terms did Frank Zeidler was mayor of Milwaukee for? It felt like forever.
It was a long time. Yeah, it was into the early 1960s.
And he started, 20 years was he mayor?
Something like that, yeah.
His is really an amazing story. I don't remember. Are there any books written on? I'm sure there must be something
there
written on.
There must be. Yeah, I'm not aware.
You're not aware?
No. There should be. If there aren't.
So what's coming up you say you do a lot of, your institute does a lot of outreach. What are some of the outreach things that are coming up in the future for you down the road here?
Well, we do lots and lots of presentations on various topics that are related to the legacy of German-speaking migration to the state, including the present. So a lot of the presentations that I myself do are related to the Amish and Mennonite presence in the state. And I refer to that as sort of the most recent chapter of German-speaking migration to Wisconsin. Wisconsin has the fourth largest Amish population among 33 U.S. states now. So a lot of Amish people here. And they speak a language that's very closely related to German. It's called Pennsylvania Dutch.
And how did the Amish wind up here?
Again, sort of looking for economic opportunities, except they didn't migrate from Europe directly. They migrated from other parts of the United States and are continuing to migrate here.
Oh, is that right?
Absolutely.
What is the population now?
Somewhere between 25,000 and 30,000. And then there are probably 5,000 to 7,000 horse and buggy driving old order Mennonites located mostly in Clark and Grant counties.
I had some Amish craftsman make a dining room table for me many years back that was capable of seating 14 people, I think it was. And they did a wonderful job, and I was frankly surprised at how inexpensive it was at the time for something that was, they had to make the spec to fit a spot that I had in the house that I owned at the time. And they are amazing craftspeople.
Yeah, one particular draw to Wisconsin is the access to lumber. So they do a lot of things with wood, so like furniture making, cabinet making, there are pallet shops, there are sawmills, so... most of them, they all live in rural areas, but they don't depend on agriculture as their main source of income for the most part. And so many businesses are in some way connected with lumber.
Yeah. And that table was made from Wisconsin lumber as well. And I think right from the guy's farm. So maybe that's why he... So it was so inexpensive, but I was amazed and really pleased. And pleased to have you with us today, Mark. It's been that time flew by here.
Sure did. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us. Mark Loudon, professor of German linguistics and the director of the Max Cadde Institute for German-American Studies at UW-Madison. Up next, we're going to switch gears entirely. We'll talk with the UW-Madison food science professor, Bradley Bowling, about how natural pigments from cranberries and other crops could soon start replacing artificial colors in our food. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.